Interfaith Alliance and its partner organizations are accustomed to juggling many priorities at once, particularly in recent years. But this week might be a record breaker, nonetheless. For a look at what I mean, I'm happy to welcome Alliance President Rabbi Jack Moline back to State of Belief Radio. Jack, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to be with us today.
Welton, it's a relief to be able to talk with somebody who has already responded, as I have, to the news this week.
Oh, my goodness. Interfaith Alliance has been communicating two distinct messages in the days since the passing of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. What are the two, and why are they important?
Well, the first message, Welton, is, of course, the sadness that we have over the loss of the justice. Whether or not you agreed with her judicial philosophy and whether or not you subscribed to her opinions in the cases that were decided by the Supreme Court, she was unquestionably a towering figure in American jurisprudence, sort of an ironic position for her to be in, since she was physically so diminutive and joked about it herself. So the first message that we wanted to put out was America needs to take the time to grieve for this remarkable, remarkable American, and to do so without exploiting the questions that are raised by her untimely passing. I hope that that people took the time that I was able to take this weekend because of the occurrence of the holiday of Rosh Hashanah, of the Jewish New Year, that sort of took me away from all of the barrage of news media and the like, to be able to reflect on the contribution that she made in the context of the values that, as an observant Jew, I am connected to. But the second message that we put out there, Welton, is that this is sort of a critical decision-making time for the United States. Following the precedent of what happened just before the 2016 election, we believe that the decision as to who should take the place of Justice Ginsburg should be left to the person who is elected in this year's federal elections. That is, whoever the President of the United States will be on January 20th of next year. If that is President Trump, then his choice is clearly his choice. If it is former Vice President Biden, then by the standards set by the Republicans themselves, it ought to be his choice. But if that decision is not going to be made by the president elected on November 3rd, then there are significant questions that need to be asked of any nominee. In fact, even if that decision is made by the president elected on November 3rd, there are significant questions that need to be asked, and we have published them. Would you like to hear them?
Yes, it'd be fine.
Great. First of all, we think that any justice ought to be asked what role, if any, their personal faith or philosophy plays in their judicial philosophy. That's a critical question when we're thinking about whether decisions will be made strictly in line with a constitutional perspective or whether there are other values that will come into play. Interfaith Alliance clearly believes that it is the Constitution which should be the sole determinant of judicial decisions. And we need to know if that is not what a nominee to the court believes. The second question is, if a conflict arose between their faith and their obligations to the Constitution, how it would be resolved? I would like to tell you that that question is not a question at all. I'd like to tell you that President Kennedy resolved that when he was a candidate, and he said, I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute. And he prefaced it by saying, it isn't which church he believes in, it's which America he believes in. But we have lots of people in this country right now who are claiming that their understanding of God's law supersedes the Constitution. And such a person, in my opinion, is not qualified to be in charge of interpreting the Constitution. The third question we ask is how they understand the Establishment Clause. As you know, as our listeners know, the Establishment Clause prevents the government from favoring any religion or even religion in general over anybody else's belief system. If a candidate is a believer in any kind of religious supremacy, then that's a violation of the Establishment Clause. The fourth question we would ask is whether the Free Exercise Clause supersedes the rights of others. This is the test of I can swing my arms freely until I reach the edge of your nose. And obviously our belief is that the personal beliefs of any individual citizen or any group of citizens do not truncate the rights and privileges of any other citizen in the United States if what they're seeking to do is both permitted by the law and in some cases even recommended by the law. And lastly, the question that we want to ask any nominee is, should taxpayer dollars be permitted to fund the mission of religious institutions? And if so, should the government be allowed to regulate the use of those dollars? We have lots of examples in which faith-based institutions have sought government contracts and funding, but have done so with the understanding that they have to meet the stringent nonpartisan and secular values that are presented by the government in mandating that contract. There are those who believe, especially in the wake of funding that's come for COVID relief, that the government can fund partisan and parochial activities in religious institutions. And with tax dollars comes the demand of oversight. It's part of the public trust. Do we have a justice who believes that the government can interfere in the workings of your local church or your denomination? So those are the questions we want to ask.
Jack, when I was sitting where you're sitting, we had a time or two when we were dealing with what's going to happen at the Supreme Court. I want our listeners to know, hear what you've just heard from Jack Moline is a tremendous difference between what our approach to our work does and what the religious right does. The religious right says God's talked to us and we know who needs to be there. We say it is important that we quiz people so that we know whether or not our Constitution is going to stay intact by the person who is in that seat. That is a crucial, crucial difference between the way the religious right works and the way Interfaith Alliance works. We ask questions, not make demands that God has told us we can use God's name to do that with. It is important, people. It is important.
So, well, I only want to amplify what you just said. When you and I are having this conversation, we do not yet know who or even if the president is going to nominate sometime this weekend or afterwards. All right? Who he nominates is likely endorsed by people on the religious right for exactly the reasons that you outlined that they make their decisions. We at Interfaith Alliance have a terrible dilemma if that happens, because following your precedent, we've been very reluctant to endorse or oppose any nominee. And certainly we are constrained from endorsing or opposing any candidate for elected office by our 501c3 status. But if we wind up raising objection to one nominee or another, it will not be because we have a different faith perspective on who that person is. In fact, we will defend to the death the prohibition of a religious test for office, no matter what that office is. It would be on the constitutional grounds that form the basis of our collaboration as an American citizenry.
Absolutely. And that's what makes me so proud of our organization. With everything that's going on right now, it was heartening to see so many people gather for candlelight vigils to pay tribute to Justice Ginsburg. Do you see a similar focus on what's happening to her seat on the High Court?
I think that people drawn together to pay tribute to the late justice are doing so out of a sense of loss. As I said earlier, even if they didn't agree with her perspective or some of her opinions, I see people lining up on opposite sides of an imaginary divide about how that seat should be filled and with whom it should be filled. And frankly, it's distressing because the conversations are not about who will bring the proper judicial temperament and the proper constitutional perspective to that seat. It's being framed by both sides, although primarily by the religious right, as to who will do our bidding, who will undo decisions about reproductive health care for women, who will allow for a greater preference for a certain kind of Christianity in this country, who will allow greater power in the hands of wealthy private citizens than the American public. That's the wrong conversation to be having here. The right conversation to be having is who is best qualified to apply the Constitution as it is meant to be applied for the betterment of all Americans.
Jack, what sets Amy Coney Barrett apart from the other Heritage Foundation-approved judges on the list this administration has frequently touted?
So herein lies a dilemma in terms of questioning, and I want to emphasize again that Article 6 of the Constitution does not allow for a religious test for office. I am delighted that she has an active and meaningful spiritual life in her private life. But there is an indication that she is a member of a right-wing religious group that asked her as part of her membership to sign a covenant that describes a particular way of looking at the relationships between men and women that commits her to doing God's will above all other, as it is understood by this particular group, and that may presuppose her willingness to decide matters of sexual orientation, of reproductive health, of federal policy, on the basis of commitments that have nothing to do with the Constitution, have everything to do with the particular religious perspective that she seems to have committed to. Now, there are lots of people who may hold those commitments privately, but to the best of my knowledge, she's the only person being mentioned as a nominee who has a piece of paper that she apparently, and I haven't seen it, so I can't say for sure, she apparently signed that commits her to those things that are unquestionably, in my mind, unconstitutional.
The political religious right is predictably oversimplifying the debate to claim that simply being a Christian is what makes Barrett unacceptable to the so-called radical left. In the face of that kind of dishonesty, Jack, where do we even begin trying to set the record straight?
You know, the only thing we can do is rely on precedent, not only precedent of who's served on the court, but precedent in whom we as dissenters from that particular perspective have shown respect and appreciation for in their service on the court. I point, for example, to Justice Kennedy, who is himself devout and deeply engaged in his faith community. I had the opportunity to speak with him about that and about his respect for the First Amendment and the religious freedom clauses of the First Amendment, both philosophically and in terms of his personal commitment. He was very proud of the fact that his children went to a Jewish preschool when they were young, and that it gave them the opportunity as a family to discuss the distinction between what they practiced at home, what their personal commitments are, and what the Constitution guaranteed for all people, even with children at a young age. And he brought that with him to the court. He was certainly someone who decided frequently in the opposite direction that we might have preferred as Interfaith Alliance. But there was no question that he was doing so on the grounds he understood to be constitutional and not on the basis of a particular religious faith. Likewise, I will tell you that, though I'd be hard-pressed to start naming the cases, Justice Kagan, Justice Breyer, Justice Ginsburg have all either written opinions or been in a cohort of people who have decided differently than we would have hoped. All of them Jewish, all of them share that with me. I had no hesitation to criticize some of the things that they have done on the court and before they came to sit on the court that I considered to be unconstitutional, even if they were able to justify them in terms of values I might share as a Jew.
Jack, one last question I simply have to ask before we get off. It was alarming to hear the president prove the cynics right and open the door to refusing a peaceful transfer of power. We heard what would be a violation of any pledge that he made at the oath of office. This is not a bridge that we can wait to cross if we get to it. Is there guidance from Interfaith Alliance on responding to this anti-constitutional outrage?
So we don't have a formal statement yet, Weldon, because this is something that, though the president has sort of danced around it a little bit, this is the first time he's been quite so explicit. And I think some of our readers may have seen some of the recent writing that's been done in the media about how he might go about frustrating the will of the people and the constitutional practices of our elections. I will say that we at Interfaith Alliance will not stand for anything that compromises the democracy we're trying to preserve. How we'll do that, what we'll say about it, and what the basis of it will be is subject to conversations that I will have with our leadership, both our board leadership and our staff leadership. But you can expect that even if we can't come up with something that makes it sound like it's the mission of Interfaith Alliance, the president of Interfaith Alliance will be out in the streets making sure that this doesn't happen.
Jack, I'm really glad you're there, and I'm glad that you have that in you ready to go. Know that we are behind you. Rabbi Jack Moline is president of Interfaith Alliance, protecting true religious freedom for all. Jack, as always, thank you so much for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Welton, and go Cubs.
Before we go, I don't want this week's show to go by without marking my 10th anniversary of working with producer Ray Kirstein. We first met in 2006 when State of Belief was being launched at Air America Radio in New York City, where Ray was director of creative services and working with various new weekend programs. Prior to Air America, Ray had been a producer at Sirius Satellite Radio for 4 years, but he had a passion for what we were trying to do at the intersection of religion, government, and politics. And he eventually stepped in as producer of this program in late September of 2010. A great day for State of Belief and for me. There have been any number of obstacles that came close to derailing this project over the years. And it's rather remarkable to consider that we are still here, working together after a full decade. Relocated to Germany in 2012, I retired from leading Interfaith Alliance in Washington, D.C. in 2015. The show has gone from being physically based in New York and Washington to Leipzig, Germany, and Monroe, Louisiana. But with the commitment and support of many of our listeners and of Interfaith Alliance, we've been able to continue bringing you stories of leaders and activists, organizers and trailblazers who find different ways for religion to be a force for good in our nation, upholding the crucial constitutional principle that ours is a nation of rights and opportunities for people of faith and of no faith, and resist the temptation of majoritarian dominance and denominational divisiveness that has so painfully pervaded our country. There are times we ask ourselves, how will this make a difference? And often we don't have an answer to that question. But with confidence, I can say this. It's better that these conversations happen. It's better that even a few of us pause and consider the consequences of doing nothing and the potential of doing something in the service of the nation we love and the values we espouse. And it's better that we can spend this time together, even if apart, remembering that none of us is alone in what we mourn, what we celebrate, and what we treasure. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your donations help keep us on the air. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and be a part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people to conversation and to company. I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week for whom you think this might be helpful. They probably will thank you for it. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.